Colin, thank you so much for joining me. We're here to talk about your very interesting book, The Global Pigeon, and I understand that you wrote it partly as a way of understanding the pigeon as a kind of cultural phenomenon, but also to redeem its sometimes rather poor reputation in modern life. What got you interested in this topic?
Purely accidental. I was getting a PhD in sociology at City University of New York, and I was a young second-year graduate student interested in urban life. I fell in love with Jane Jacobs' The Death and Life of Great American Cities and would wander around Greenwich Village and the West Village and sort of think, how could I write something like that? And there was one tiny little pocket park right on 6th Avenue in Carmine called Father Demo Square. The first time that I went to Father Demo Square to do research, a pigeon defecated on me. And then I looked up and realized that even though this park is less than a tenth of an acre, there was hundreds, 500, 600, 700 pigeons. They were really dominating the space. And when I spent more time there, I saw that people would come and feed the pigeons there, and that pigeons were so kind of tame and used to being fed that then they would train strangers to feed them. They would walk close to them and kind of jump on the bench to get fed. And when I would go to these public meetings, people would complain about homeless people and pigeons, and actually in very similar ways. For some people, pigeons are seen as disorder because in cities we like nature, but we like it compartmentalized, tamed, controlled. And pigeons are so successful at adapting to the built environment that they nest on our air conditioners. They're pedestrians. They literally walk on the streets. They sit on the benches. These are spaces that we've designated are for people only. And so in the beginning, I thought there's really something interesting about the way that street pigeons are kind of seen as part of disorder and filth. But I realized that they're actually a major part of the cityscape. They shape how we experience the city for better and for worse. And then when I would go onto my rooftop at night in Brooklyn at the time I was living in Bushwick, I would see these men flying domesticated pigeons. And I thought, what's up with these guys? You know, they're putting up flocks of 800, 900, 1,000 pigeons and training them to fly in these tight clusters. So now that I was writing about pigeons, I decided to get to know them. One of the really fascinating stories that came out was all of the older men that I met who were breeding and flying pigeons in Brooklyn were white, mostly Italian or descendants of Italians. And this was an activity that was brought over by European immigrants. But the younger men doing it were Puerto Rican and black. And what I discovered is Bushwick is a neighborhood that in 1950 was almost 100% white, and by 2000 was 3% white. And so the old-timers that I came to know in 2006 to 2010 were the few ethnic whites who aged in place as these neighborhoods changed over. Now, the new people who coming in were Hispanic, Puerto Rican, largely African-American. And if you breed 1,000 pigeons, you need help. So they actually started to recruit the young boys of color who moved in with their families, who have now grown into men who breed and fly pigeons and have passed it on to their kids. And so this very interesting moment of neighborhood changeover, which there was a lot of racial tension and even rioting around it, but there's this little subculture that emerged, you know, that united these people across these generational and race lines around pigeon keeping.
Did you get a chance to talk to them about what appealed to them about it?
Most of them kept pigeons because their fathers did. And so it was something that they inherited, and so they just grew up around it. But for the younger men of color that I came to know who got into it from these older Italian men, much in the way that I was interested in it, they say, you know, I was 8 or 9 years old, and I would sit in the park and just see this huge cluster of pigeons, and they looked beautiful. They were all turning in unison like a school of fish, and the type of pigeon they keep has these white wingtips. And what's amazing about that is men like to fly their pigeons best an hour before the sun goes down. And so it's that golden light, and it catches all of the wingtips, and it really looks like glitter. It just looks like thousands of shimmering, you know, dots in the sky. And so they would just say, I saw that. And I just thought it was so beautiful. It was so stunning. And so they say, you know, I saw that. And then these older Italian men would see me gazing up and say, hey, kid, you want to come up?
There's a pattern clearly of this being a male-dominated sport.
Yes.
And a male-dominated hobby. Have you found any women interested in this?
Very few. So what's interesting is if I ask the men why women aren't involved, you know, their own opinions tended to be chauvinist. They'd say, oh, you know, women, they just rather, they don't want to get dirty. You know, this is, you know, we scrape pigeon crap. We, you know, we're building the coops. Women don't, they'd rather go shoe shopping or something like that. I didn't find that to be the case. So then what was interesting is that sometimes, like literally while the men would be giving me this line, their children would come up on the roof. And if they had a son and a daughter, they'd say, oh, you know, look at Steven. He's so good with the birds. You know, he has his favorites. And then if their daughter would go near the coop, they'd say, you know, Becky, what are you doing? Don't go in there. You're going to break the eggs. You don't know what you're doing. Go downstairs. And I would watch them, you know, re-inscribe these boundaries. They would not allow their daughters who had a natural curiosity for these birds. And then also, if their wives or girlfriends came up on the roof, it would often be this, what are you doing up here? What do you want? Go back downstairs now. And so this was the men's sociable space, and they protected it that way, right? And so I saw them actively working to keep women away. I did meet a few women who race pigeons. In every case, they got into racing because of their husband. They probably exist, but I personally did not meet a woman who on her own just decided to get into pigeons. It's very much a masculine subculture that they work to keep that way.
You've been talking almost exclusively about pigeons collectively because their behavior is so collective, because our perception of them is so much to do with collective. Have you gotten to know any individual pigeons?
That's an interesting question that I've not been asked before. But yes, when this all started in Father Demo Square, I came to know people who regularly fed pigeons. And it started from me asking them, I would say, do they have different personalities to you? Can you tell them apart? And in the beginning, to be honest, I didn't believe them. They say, oh yeah, you know, this one is spots. This one's nasty. I call this one so-and-so. And they had names for them and they had entire personalities for them. But the thing is over time, I realized that these folks were seeing what was there. So for instance, this old lady Anna, who called this one pigeon nasty, she called him that because he picked fights with all the other pigeons. And she would say to me, whenever he lands, he pecks away all the other birds. And even though I'm holding seed in my hand, he goes and tries to get it out of my pocket. And that's the first thing he did. She goes, here he comes. And Nasty came in and did those things, right? And so by following them over time, I actually could then start to see the differences in the birds, see the behaviors that they saw. And then once I started hanging out on rooftops with the men, even though they keep massive amounts of pigeons, hundreds of them, they have their favorites. And so once I spent a lot of time with them on their rooftops, I could discern the differences in them. And there was some that right off the bat, for my first time on the roof, felt comfortable enough to land on my hand. So I did get to know them individually, and they have a lot of variation in character.
Do you see you and your son bonding over pigeons sometime in the future?
I think it'll happen. My wife jokes, you know, I don't want you to turn into the crazy pigeon guy, you know, taking our son out there every day. But hey, we live on Washington Square. There's a lot of pigeons there. If he wants to, I'll encourage him to do it. I'm not going to force him to have a bunch of pigeons land all over him. I will say I'm not worried about him getting sick from street pigeons. This is a huge misperception. Pigeons carry diseases. It's true. All animals carry diseases. Cats and dogs carry diseases. What epidemiologists care about is whether they carry diseases that are readily transmissible to people. And both the New York Department of Health and the Centers for Disease Control say that there are no confirmed instances of people getting sick from casual interactions with street pigeons. And so I just want to put that out there. That's one thing that I don't worry about if my son wants to feed pigeons, is that he's going to get sick. It's not really something that people have to worry about.
Colin, thank you so much.
My pleasure.